With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to today's Freeman Report. It is Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. I'm James Freeman, your host for the next 2 hours. And coming up on today's show, I'll be busting the climate hoax with Professor Ian Plimer, who says city-dwelling bureaucrats are destroying the environment with net zero policies. Ian also says that man-made global warming is a monumental fraud. Following that discussion, I'll be speaking with lawyer and host of the Grey Matter podcast, Leighton Gray. We'll be discussing the communist takeover of Canada after it's been revealed that China interfered in the past two elections in Canada. So lots to discuss in the next hour after we get today's breaking news from Gemma Cooper in just a moment. But before we head over to Gemma, I have an important question for you all. Do you trust the government? Well, it might seem like an obvious answer to those of us who are awake, but not everybody watches TNT. In fact, as we learned this week, some people still watch the BBC. I am, of course, talking about John Mayer, who appeared on this show on Monday. John said he thought the BBC is great and also backed the government's line that the vaccine saved millions of lives. Now, we know that there's lots of Johns out there in the wilderness, but how many are there exactly? Well, a new report compiled by the National Centre for Social Research goes some way towards answering that question. And surprise, surprise, trust in the government and parliament has fallen sharply over the past few years. The report is based upon a survey of 2,364 adults aged over 18 in England, Wales and Scotland. So quite a big sample, a fairly robust number that for a survey. And what it shows is that the share of the population who say they trust the government, or parliament rather, fell by 13 percentage points to 36% in 2023, when compared with previous findings in 2021. While trust in the government fell by 11 percentage points to 31% over the same period, which means 64% of people do not trust Parliament and a whopping 69% do not trust the government. Not surprising, really, given the tyranny imposed on our nation 4 years ago. I'm just surprised that still around a third of the country still trust the British Parliament and the government. But what about other government institutions? Well, scepticism towards the Bank of England also rose over the two-year period, with 79% of the population saying they trust it, down from 86% in 2021. So while trust has fallen in the UK's central bank, it is still trusted by more than twice as many people compared with the politicians. An interesting result, but then I guess most people know even less about what the Bank of England is up to than what the politicians are doing, because if they knew, that figure would be far lower. For example, why did the bank raise interest rates so high when the type of inflation we have witnessed is not fueled by demand, which is the whole point in raising interest rates, to control inflation, i.e. to subdue demand? No, inflation has been fueled by supply side issues, but mainly money printing, which the bank knows fully well. What we have witnessed is a transfer of wealth from the most of the population to the wealthiest few in the country and beyond, and it's all by design. But ordinary folk haven't got a clue and have sucked up the government's mantra of it's just a cost of living crisis, which says nothing about what caused it and why. But maybe the most surprising result is that trust in the Office for National Statistics was the highest for any government institution, with a rating of 87%, slightly down from 89% in 2021, which again, surprisingly, was followed by the British courts with 82%. I'm not sure Julian Assange would agree with those figures. Hannah White, director and chief executive of think tank the Institute for Government, said that the decline of trust in the government and parliament may reflect the numerous ethical controversies, to put it mildly, that have beset Westminster, from misbehaviour revealed by Partygate to a disproportionately high number of individual scandals of MPs being forced to step down for all sorts of dodgy reasons. They're my words, by the way, at the end. Now, I wonder how many have lost trust in Parliament and the government because they locked us in our homes and purposely frightened the bejesus out of everyone in order to get us to roll up our sleeves to take an experimental new drug. I wonder how many have lost confidence because of that. Well, not surprisingly, the National Centre for Social Research didn't ask that question. What a surprise. If you want to get in touch, then please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you're enjoying the show and you love what TNT is doing, then get yourself over to your favorite social media platform. Give me, James Freeman, a follow and TNT Radio, and help us get the word out about all of the great stuff we're doing here on this station. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right then, over to Gemma Cooper, our news correspondent for the UK. Hello, Gemma.
Hello there, James. Well, it's been Prime Minister's question time every Wednesday. It's Prime Minister's question time in the House of Commons. And Rishi Sunak has been grilled on Israel this morning, well, early afternoon. He's been faced a grilling, actually, from one Labour MP who said, how can he still remain a bystander to horror, talking about what's going on in the Middle East? Dr. Rosanna Allen Khan, she's a Labour MP. She rounded on Sunak. And he also has been attacked on the news story that we covered on TNT yesterday about the early release of prisoners. Prisoners are now being released up to 70 days early. It was supposed to be 18 initially when these plans were announced, to make way for more prisoners to come in. It's rather like a nightclub, the prison system in the UK now, one in, one out. But the early release system has come in for a lot of criticism. It turns out some people have been released that do pose a risk to children. There's no infrastructure in place. And Keir Starmer today quizzed the PM on that. The opposition leader quizzing the Prime Minister, saying, how is that making Britain a safer place? Staying with politics, and within the last hour, Richard Tice, the leader of Reform UK, has poured cold water on suggestions from a senior Tory MP earlier, former MP, saying that the Tories and Reform should join forces in an attempt to unite the right and win the next election. So Jacob Rees-Mogg, the former finance minister, he said that Reform were the natural bedfellows for the Conservatives. It was the only way to really unite and hold the next election within reach. Richard Tice says, absolutely no way, that's not going to happen. And a lot of the other parties are saying, oh, for God's sake, such a pantomime, it's electioneering. Just get on with fixing the problem rather than clutching at straws. And this is a story I wouldn't normally bring to the table, a showbiz story. I try and avoid the celebrity culture. But the TV presenter Philip Schofield has broken a year-long silence on social media after resigning dramatically from his presenting role at ITV last year. He's posted a snap of himself watching Formula One with his dog. Many are asking what this means. And of course, that story, the actual cover story as to why he left ITV, I think a lot of people think there's a bit more to that story than met the eye and the way it was presented, James.
I'm trying to stop laughing about Philip posting a picture of his dog. I'm not going to comment on that because I don't know where that'll lead. Richard Tice and this Jacob Rees-Mogg. I'm not surprised Richard Tice has totally dismissed the Tories. They are a bunch of backstabbing, whatever word you want to fill in that bleep with. You know, when we were coming up to Brexit, the election after that was, you know, the whole country had come to a standstill. Boris Johnson was leader of the Conservatives. And that general election, there were negotiations that were going on in the background. I didn't know this at the time. But basically, what the Tories were doing is leading the Brexit Party on. They were holding lots of meetings, basically to find out about what we were up to. And what did they do? They absolutely stabbed us in the back. Of course, Annunciata Rees-Mogg, Jacob's sister, she was actually part of the Brexit Party. She defected along with three others literally a week before, after lots of campaigns to ruin the Brexit Party. It was pretty torrid times. And I think actually that was the plan all along with Annunciata, which is pretty bad. It was pretty shocking at the time because, you know, we'd all gone out to Brussels together. We'd been colleagues out there and experienced a hell of a thing going out there, that we were the biggest individual country party in that parliament. And we made a lot of noise, and we felt like we were comrades out there representing the British public. So I wouldn't trust the Tories with making my toast, let alone going into a pact with them. So I'm not surprised Richard Tice has said that.
Yeah, and he's also said that the Conservative Party are viewing reforms policies, they're using their policy platform as a kind of crib sheet as to what the British public are really thinking. He said that, you know, they're taking their policy on gender identity, solar and wind farms and immigration, so climate basically, and immigration, they're taking it directly from reform, he says, and then repackaging them and making them out to be Conservative Party policies. And interestingly, when he talks about gender there, today, of course, well, tomorrow is the official announcement from the Education Secretary, but we've had this whole slew of headlines today about how gender identity and sex education, they're going to be completely radically overhauled in schools. Children under the age of 9 won't be taught anything about sex education, and then it will just be the basics at 9, a little bit more at 11, and then a little bit more at 13. Parents will be much more involved in sex education, and teachers will not be able now to say to children, oh yeah, you can change your gender, I won't tell your mum and dad, you can be whatever you want in the classroom. It's all going to go, and a lot of it's going to become law that teachers can't enable this stuff. Now, has that come from the Conservatives then, or have they taken it from reform and made it their own as an election looms? You know, if what he says is true, I don't trust any politician personally. And it is electioneering in a way. But he's absolutely adamant. No, it's not going to happen. Whereas Jacob Rees-Mogg almost looked like he was begging for it this morning. He was saying, please join. And we'll make some senior reform members Conservative candidates, and we'll put them in seats, and we'll get the election. It means the election is within reach, you know, desperation in a way, because he must have known Tice was going to say no.
Yeah, I mean, look what the Tories did to the Lib Dems. They actually beat them up and nearly ruined the party. Say ruined the party in terms of the number of MPs they've got voted. They really did do a job on them, because basically the Lib Dems took a lot of the flak for all of the Tory nonsense. No, I wouldn't trust them. And, you know, I know that people, I think it was our political editor, Basil Valentine, said that Nigel has ruled himself out. I don't know that he has, because in the last few days, I've seen a post from Nigel on Facebook. He's changed his profile picture there to Nigel. If you've ever been in a meeting with Nigel, he's very, very different in person than he is on the TV. But he does make that pose like this when he's thinking in a meeting. And that is his profile picture in Facebook. And he's actually put a post out saying, and I think he's quoted a news story saying that if Nigel Farage joins Reform UK in terms of standing for election, then the Tories are going to be wiped out, literally wiped off the face of the earth. And he says, what should I do? So either Nigel is teasing, which is very, very unlike Nigel. I think he's building that wave, because that's what Nigel is good at. Unlike other politicians, which tend to ride waves that are already there, they just get up and ride the wave that is already in existence. Nigel creates his own wave and then jumps up on it. So I wouldn't bet on this, but I think Nigel potentially is going to stand at this year's general election, which will make a big difference. I mean, even me, I think if Nigel does lead the Reform Party and he does stand, then I certainly will back them, even if it's just to watch the Tories being absolutely annihilated. Right, Gemma, thank you for those stories. Obviously, you'll be back in the second hour of the show for more breaking news. To the rest of you, my first guest, I'm really looking forward to speaking with my first guest today. He is Professor Ian Plimer. And basically, he says that the whole climate warming agenda is just an absolute load of nonsense. And he's a real character as well, going by the videos I've seen from him online. So I'm really looking forward to that. And you should too. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are sat, right here on TNT.
TNT's Limbed Open.
I don't see myself as a prude. I don't think that I censor anyone, pretty much. But family entertainment should be exactly that. I don't expect family entertainment to be intensely sexualized and therefore inappropriate for the viewing with my six-year-old daughter. But that's what happened last night. The Eurovision Song Contest was infested by a lot of mediocre songs, but that's a matter of taste and certainly not offensive. But the UK entry, in my view, was disgusting. It was entirely sexualized, indicating sex acts, which I won't describe on air, with nothing left to the imagination, really. What I was concerned about is that my six-year-old didn't understand what was being portrayed and was confused by it. I turned over. I have to admit, I had low expectations, but despite that, I didn't expect to be appalled on behalf of her.
Limbed Open. And today's news talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's news talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Right, okay, obviously we talk about the climate hoax a lot on this show. So I'm actually delighted. I've seen lots of his videos online, but this is his first time on the Freeman Report. Welcome to the show, Professor Ian Plimer. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on the Freeman Report.
Thank you for coming. Ian, tell us how the world is warming and how we are to blame.
Well, it depends upon when you ask that question. If you asked that question at the time of Jesus, it was much warmer than now, and you'd be facing a cooling. If you asked that question when the Vikings came and raped and pillaged, then that was a cooler time, and the planet was warming. If you asked that question in the medieval times, that was a warm period, and it cooled into the Little Ice Age. If you asked that question 300 years ago, you're in the depths of the Little Ice Age, and we've been warming since then. So we are warming and we are cooling. It depends upon when you ask the question.
So it's got nothing to do with us today, then. Obviously, this is a cycle. What's the science behind this, Ian? Because, you know, obviously we've got the temperature does fluctuate across time, a very long time period. But we also see carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It does fluctuate. So is there a relationship between the two, and what is it?
We have climate cycles, which we can measure. And these on the geological timescale are every 400 million years when we pull apart and stitch back the continents. And every 143 million years when we have a bad galactic address. And then we have the orbital cycles every 100,000, 40,000 and 20,000 years. And then we have solar cycles, which vary anything from 22 years to 10,000 years. And then we have a lunar tidal node cycle every 18 and a half years. So climates are always changing and they are cyclical. Carbon dioxide in the past has been much, much higher than now. We're currently at 0.04%. For most of geological time, it was about 20%. It was much higher than now. And during that geological time when we had high carbon dioxide, we had three of the six great ice ages. So clearly carbon dioxide wasn't driving runaway global warming or boiling. we have been reducing in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere since we had complex life on Earth, since we had animals and plants. And we have gone over the last 500 million years from 0.7% carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to 0.04%. We are actually dangerously low. And if we continue to follow that long-term geological trend, we will find that plants will die. That's the natural end result of having a low carbon dioxide atmosphere. So we are currently at just over 0.04% carbon dioxide. That's not enough for plants to thrive. They like about two or three times that amount.
So how come they've got it so wrong then?
Well, years ago, we once believed that we were at the centre of the universe, that the sun rotated around us, and everyone believed that. We also believed that the continents were static and they didn't move. Now we know the continents move. We also believed that the atom was the smallest unit of material. That was wrong. We then believed that the electron was the smallest unit. That was wrong. We now know that subatomic particles are smaller. So science has its fads and fashions and fools and frauds. And occasionally you go through times of collective belief. We also see in societies that you go into these periods of madness like the Dutch tulip craze. So it's quite normal for societies to behave in irrational fashions.
So do you think, and obviously, you know, I know everything you're talking about there, but I'm just trying to kind of figure out where you sit on things. So do you think this is just a big mistake and that, you know, the science is bad, or do you think there's more to this? Is there an agenda behind it? And if so, what is it?
I don't think there's any science involved. Chemistry and geology clearly shows that carbon dioxide does not drive climate. And we've known that for hundreds of years. This has got nothing to do with science. It's got nothing to do with the environment. It's a magnificent business opportunity that's been created by governments who have been embarrassed by green groups putting pressure on them. And so there are huge opportunities for people that want to have wind or solar or green hydrogen, name it what it is. But if you can destroy the opposition, and that is destroy coal-fired power stations, if you can destroy people's use of electricity from gas, then there are huge opportunities there. And so on these things, you just follow the money. And people are making shedloads of money from this current fad.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100% on that, by the way. I was actually a member of the European Parliament, and when you go out there and you see how it's all set up, it is just a... It's a lobbyist wet dream, and it's all closed markets. So they set up these markets. It's heavily bureaucratic. It's almost impossible for small companies to enter these markets. And it's just a business opportunity for the big corporations,
essentially.
Well, of course.
And as an MEP, you would have been aware that you have very little power, that the power really rested in the bureaucrats who are unelected. They drive the system. They will outlive you. You have to face an electorate. They don't. And they set the policy, and they will white-hand you if you don't follow their policy. So this is a wonderful new system run by unelected people, and the White Shoe Brigade come in behind. They can see superb opportunities to make money, and the best way to make money is to kill off reliable, cheap power and put in another form of power.
Yeah. Now, obviously, that money, that business opportunity, all the money that flows from it has a lot of impact on science. I mean, we've seen that with the whole COVID nonsense over the past 4 years and how science is being captured. Mm-hmm. But how do you think so many scientists have been captured by this climate hoax? Because, you know, we're led to believe that there's a consensus among whatever nine, I don't know what the exact figure is, but, you know, I've heard all sorts bandied about whether it's 99% of scientists agree that the climate is warming because of, you know, I'm sure there's question marks above around those figures in the first place. But it's undeniable that a lot of world leading experts are saying that the world is warming. How have they managed to convince them, or are they just all corrupt?
Well, science doesn't work by a vote. Unlike the European Parliament, it doesn't work on a show of hands. Science is married to evidence. If you ignore a lot of evidence, and I argue that the evidence from the past is ignored, you will come up with a very different conclusion than if you are a polymath, as I am, and you look at the whole evidence. A scientist only lives by research grants. If you don't get a research grant, you don't survive. Now, I have sat on the Australian, the German, and the Swedish research councils. You get directives from government saying that we are having a war on cancer. And if you can show that drinking beer and ingrown toenails stops people getting cancer, then you will get funded for that research. We now have the same mentality coming from governments. If you can show that drinking beer and having ingrown toenails is related to climate change, you will get funded. If you don't get funded by grants as a scientist, you do not live. You're finished. Now, you often see retired scientists say, well, yes, I had to follow the party line because that was the only way of survival. It's got nothing to do with consensus. Science doesn't work on consensus at all. Politics does. Science works on data.
Now, you must have sat down in a bar with some of these people that are following this narrative. Do they admit behind the scenes when there's no cameras and no recordings going on, do they admit that they are sceptical at all? Or do you think they buy into it?
Well, the first thing is they will never have a drink with me. And the second thing is when I go to a bar, I can never remember what I said or when I left or what happened. But for some years, I have been pursuing leading scientists with a fundamental question, and that is, can you please show me scientists at the Scott Polar Institute in Cambridge? I've been pushing him for quite some time about this. I've never had an answer. I've done it with Australia's former chief scientist. I sit on a board with him, and I can never get half a dozen landmark scientific papers that show that human emissions drive global warming. So I think the whole thing is a scientific house of cards. But just imagine someone gave me half a dozen scientific papers. They would also have to show me that the natural emissions, which are 97% of the total, don't drive global warming. So it's checkmate before the game starts. So I think a lot of these people know that it's a very frail system that they're supporting, that they need to have funds for their research, and there is a consensus. And this whole business of 97% of scientists, that was a survey done by a chap called John Cook. He sent out surveys to 10,000 people, 3,000 replied, and he chose 77 of the 3,000. And these are people who are unemployable except for a job in a climate institute. And out of the 77, 76 said yes, human emissions drive global warming, and one said no. That survey is absolutely and totally invalid, but it keeps getting quoted.
Yeah, statistics again, those damn statistics.
Oh, yes, of course.
Ian, we're going to take a short break for the news headlines now, but don't go anywhere, because after the break, I want to get your view on net zero policies. And also, I'd like to get your view on, because look, I think many of us now know that this whole thing about the climate is a hoax, but, you know, we do recognise, well, I certainly do anyway, that there are problems in the world. There are environmental issues, real ones, that are going on. So I'd like to hear what you are concerned about in the world, if it's not the climate. So stay where you are, Ian. We'll be back with you in just a second, right here on TNT.
Good news, people.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Here is your headline.
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken continues to fan the flames of war, taunting Russian President Vladimir Putin during a speech in Ukraine. A prominent Australian politician accused his own government of covering up mass COVID vaccination deaths in the country. And 3 years after it was introduced, the vaccine mandate that was implemented for health workers in the Australian state of New South Wales will finally be scrapped this week.
We're the pin-up boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction,
misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Right. Now, Ian, we've talked about the fact that, you know, this is a climate hoax. But this is an academic question. Governments around the world are obviously implementing net zero policies. And I think I've seen some of your videos and what you've said, that actually some of these policies, which are supposedly to stop the world's warming, are actually doing damage to the environment. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, no one knows what net zero means. If you wanted to take a strict definition of net zero, you wouldn't emit any carbon dioxide. That means you wouldn't breathe. So what on earth does net zero mean? And net zero basically means closing down any industry that is productive and any industry that manufactures, mines or farms. So net zero, to me, is absolutely catastrophic for people living on the land, growing food, people that are running mines or running factories or foundries. So in my country, we have a very large amount of carbon dioxide emitted because we have many smelters. We also sell a lot of coal. We use a lot of gas and sell a lot of gas. And if you do the calculation with the amount of carbon dioxide we emit, and then look at how much carbon dioxide is absorbed by our crops, by our grasslands, by our rangelands, by our forests, and by the continental shelf around Australia, we actually absorb about five times as much carbon dioxide as we emit. So if we follow this through to a logical conclusion, we should go to a country like Chad or Ethiopia and say, pay up. You know, we're absorbing all of your carbon dioxide. You're a country that are not doing that. You must pay us. The whole concept is ridiculous. The basis of the concept is a socialist basis, and that is to take someone else's money. And that's where net zero goes. It's got nothing to do with the environment, because why would you stop emitting plant food? Why would you starve the plants of what they need as carbon dioxide? Now, I can't see your complete body, but I don't think you've got the girth now where you could hug a tree. And the only way you can really show that you're an environmentalist is to feed a tree, and that's with carbon dioxide.
Right. Now, Ian, do you think that Australians, because look, it's clear now Americans, I think, from the surveys, a lot of Americans are very, very sceptical about the environment, despite the Biden administration pushing all of these policies. In the UK here, I think there is a growing realisation that these net zero policies are absolutely bonkers. What about in Australia? What do Australians think in general?
In Australia, we're a very wealthy country. And contrary to what...
What do Australians think in general?
In Australia, we're a very wealthy country. And contrary to what you might think on television with the bronzed man out in the surf or out in the bush, most Australians live in cities and a very narrow coastal fringe down the east coast. Very few people in Australia live in rural areas. So we have a very large number of people who have no idea where their food, fibre and energy and metals come from. They are city-based people. Their life is on a screen. They don't get calluses on their hand. They've never been out in a dust storm. They've never been bogged up to the axles. They've never had to rely on the weather for their food. So we are an urbanised country. We have no idea how carbon dioxide is generated in this country. And I think because we are so wealthy that we have to go through a recession or a period of great impoverishment before we will get a political change. Now, our electricity prices have gone up five times. This is nuts. We have thousands of years of coal in Australia, thousands of years of gas, millions of years of uranium, and we export it, but we're getting rid of our coal-fired power stations and putting our energy system dependent upon the weather, and all the infrastructure for these energy systems we buy from China. That's absolute madness. We're creating a sovereign risk and sending ourselves broke.
Yeah, and I think Germany have learned their lesson, haven't they? Because their economy and energy policy is in absolute ruins. So maybe there's a lesson there for Australians. Now, we've got a few minutes left, Ian. I'd love to hear. So we've established it is a climate hoax, but there are, I believe, real environmental problems in the world. What concerns you about what is actually going on in the world?
Well, there are environmental problems. The environmental problems, I think, in many ways come from Europe forcing African countries to have renewable energy. And the only thing renewable about renewable energy are the subsidies. We have a problem with poverty in many parts of the world. And I work in Africa. I work in the Andes. I see poverty firsthand. Plastics are a real problem. But the biggest problem is that people in third world countries do not know where their food's coming from. They do not know whether their children can be educated. And the best thing we can do to save the environment in the world is to make people wealthy. Because the wealthier people are, then the better they care for the environment and the fewer children they have.
Yes, and education, I guess, for those city dwellers who, like you said, get all their information from those screens. I think that's really important as well. Professor Ian Plimer, thank you so much for coming on the Freeman Report. Please do come back again. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Right. Okay. The rest of you don't go anywhere because we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be speaking with the host of the Grey Matter podcast. He is Leighton Gray. So stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Might not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
The Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay. So I'm looking at my next guest. I'm not sure if he can hear me yet, but we'll soon find out, I guess. Leighton Gray, welcome to the Freeman Report. Hello, Leighton. Okay, well, while we try and fix that problem, I'll talk about what we're going to discuss. We're going to talk about that dastardly politician Justin Trudeau and what's going on in Canada, because I think we've just heard reports very, very recently that China has been interfering in elections. In fact, actually, the past two elections in Canada. And of course, Justin Trudeau famously, well, on more than one occasion, said that he loves China. He thinks the way that they go about government there is absolutely brilliant. So I guess my big question is, if it's clear there's evidence that China has been interfering in Canadian elections, does Justin Trudeau know about it? Right. OK, let's see if we can get Leighton on again. Hello, Leighton. Can you hear me? OK. OK, we're going to disconnect from Leighton and we are going to come back in a second. Just while we're doing that, let me have a quick scan of the news today. So I think the big news for me, which is brilliant news, is the fact that the British government has finally come to its senses and is going to tell schools that they are not to teach kids that you can change sex. I'm laughing because whilst it is good news, it's absolutely criminal that we got here in the first place, that schools have actually been doing this. They've been telling kids that they can change gender. Some schools have allowed kids to socially transition, where teachers are actually already calling them a different name and by a different sex. So this is really good news. I think the thing that I'd like to see is somebody being held accountable for the fact that we got here in the first place. Now, what the government is going to do is it's going to tell schools they are not allowed to teach kids that they can change sex, and also that more sensitive information about sex education should not be taught to kids until they are 13. I think this is really sensible. You know, I don't want my kids, I mean, my kids are older than that now, but I don't want schools have got no place, particularly in primary schools, when we hear, you know, kids as young as 5, 6 years old, even 4 in some schools, being taught about explicit sexual practices, about things that they've got no place knowing until they're much older. As far as I'm concerned, it is the sexualization of kids. It is grooming. So this is really, really good news that the government is going to implement this policy. However, it's not the end of the story, because education is devolved in the UK. So Rishi Sunak, when he is saying that they're going to tell schools, he is only talking about schools in England. Scotland and Wales are the education there is run by the Welsh and the Scottish government. So I guess the big question is, will we see Scotland and Wales follow suit, just like they did with the banning of puberty blockers? Because, of course, that started in England. England banned puberty blockers in the NHS, which was then followed by Wales. And in the end, Scotland followed as well. So will the devolved nations follow England's lead on this and put a stop to all of this nonsense in our schools? Right. Okay. I'm looking at Leighton again. Leighton, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Sorry about that. Had a little trouble with my audio.
No problem at all. Do you know what? We've had the gremlins have been really active this week. I think it's got something to do with the Aurora, certainly, or something like that anyway. But listen, Leighton, great. Welcome to the Freeman Report. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be on your show.
Now, Leighton, obviously you're based in Canada. We do cover what's going on in Canada quite closely from time to time. But I'd not heard, I mean, look, Justin Trudeau is an absolute, I'm not going to use the word I want to, but, you know, he is a pretty despicable person and a despicable politician in my view. But one thing, and, you know, and he's obviously praised China, but one thing I'd not heard until I did research for today's show was actually that the revelations that the elections in Canada, certainly the last two, there's now evidence that China's been interfering. Tell us about that.
Well, with Jordan Trudeau, I think the best way to describe him has been done by Jordan Peterson, who described him essentially as a microphone, that you don't even need him. He's not a free-thinking individual. He's a medium for a message. Well, where is the message coming from? It's becoming pretty clear that the Trudeau vision of Canada is as a CCP client state. That's being expressed through things like the World Economic Forum, UN Agenda 2030, and also the World Health Organization, which on the 27th of May promises, or at least the threat is that it will become essentially our new government. But in the 2019 and 2021 national elections in our country, there's very clear evidence that these were essentially influenced and some would say, in fact, turned in favor of the Liberal Party of Canada. We're talking about exerting influence over voters. We're talking about a selection of candidates. We're talking about money being put into candidates' hands. And of course, this is a very, very serious thing for our national elections to be influenced in this way. But it's deeper than that. The CCP influence is now into our cultural institutions. It's into our university systems. It's into our schools. It's into our corporate systems. And I think, as I said, the vision for Trudeau is to create a client state in Canada, to be a client state for the CCP, to have it sort of be an expression of the image of the CCP. And this has been very consistent since Justin Trudeau became the leader of the Liberal Party. Interestingly, in 2013, when he made that that sort of pledge that he admired China more than any other nation, it was at that point that massive donations started to flow from the CCP into something called the Trudeau Foundation, which is sort of a well from which all of these nefarious activities are financed.
How does this fit in with the fact that Canada is a Five Eyes country? Because surely the Five Eyes, I mean, it is the biggest security, the most important, mm-hmm. probably security pact in the world. And I guess we're led to believe that they've got all of the, spying apparatus. You know, we heard revelations about Five Eyes spying on German politicians and all sorts. So how does all this fit together as a jigsaw puzzle? Do you think Five Eyes are aware of this?
Yes, I think they're quite aware of it. And it's part of the reason why, for example, a recent free trade deal with Great Britain was nixed by Great Britain for ostensible reasons. I don't think the real reasons. Also, Canada has been excluded from certain new security agreements, one that was with Australia and with Great Britain and the United States, sort of the Anglo, and Australia was included in that, sort of this Anglo alliance. Canada was excluded from that. And that's extraordinary. You know, Canada is a country that at the end of World War II actually had the fourth largest navy in the world. But we haven't been pulling our weight militarily, and we haven't been a very good partner to the nations with whom we have been historically close, including Great Britain, Australia, and the United States. More than that, I think what's happening in Canada, and I've been saying this for a while, is posing a geopolitical threat to, for example, the United States, because we are no longer sort of this friendly nation. The comedian Rob Williams once described Canada as a loft apartment over a great party, and that's a funny joke. But now we have people like Vivek Ramaswamy, a recent presidential candidate in the United States and a brilliant man in his own right, suggested, not jokingly, that there should be a wall erected between the United States and Canada. And I think that if Donald Trump is elected, I think that the geopolitical situation in North America is going to change very, very much so. And I think the Trudeau people realize it. For example, when it became clear that Donald Trump was going to be the Republican candidate, the Trudeau people actually sequestered themselves for 3 days to sit down and create a game plan for what life was going to be like with Donald Trump as the president of the United States.
Really interesting you're saying that, actually, this, because I'd always assumed, particularly because of COVID and what we saw there and the lockstep between Western governments and Canada, obviously, and along with Australia, were really the testbed for a lot mm-hmm. of the tyranny which was brought upon yeah. us. I'd always assumed that Canada was part of the club with the UK and the US, and all of that was being driven together, you know, as part of some kind of mm-hmm. pact.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, what's been revealed is that actually Canada is much closer to China than we are to Great Britain or the United States. And this is becoming increasingly true and increasingly clear, to the point that right now there have been parliamentary committees, a commission to study and to investigate the extent of Chinese interference in our elections and in our other institutions. But the Liberal Party of Canada, the Trudeau Liberals, are using every machinery possible, every parliamentary convention they can use to interfere with that investigation, even shutting down questioning through parliamentary vote to sort of stop the investigation in its tracks. And of course, anybody watching this can see precisely what's going on. They don't want the truth to come out, but the Canadian people are not as stupid as the Trudeau Liberals think they are. Right now, we have the least popular prime minister in the history of polling in this country. Right now, if there were election tomorrow, the Conservative Party would win the most massive majority ever in the history of our country. People in Canada are so sick of this man that he can't even move between streets without armed security, which is unprecedented for a prime minister in our country. In fact, even when he went to visit Great Britain, you might have seen this months ago, he had the same problem. Even people in Great Britain hate him. He had to enter actually, 10 Downing Street through a back entrance because people in Great Britain were so mad at him for what he did over the Freedom Convoy.
Yeah, I mean, he is poisonous. Him and Ardern have got a special place in Hal reserved personally by me. Because, you know, one of the things we saw Trudeau doing, which he's actually very, very talented at, is taking people's virtues towards each other and turning them against each other. So turning Canadians upon Canadians. He's very, very talented at that. Now, when I speak to Canadians and people who I know speak to Canadians, one of the odd things that I always think is everybody says, well, Canadians aren't really like that. I don't know any Canadians who like Justin Trudeau or who think the Liberal Party is a great party. How the hell are they still in government? And I guess the second question I've got for you is, you know, you're saying there that the Conservatives are going to trounce the Liberals if there was an election tomorrow. But are they really the answer for Canada?
Well, the second part of that is an excellent question that not enough people are asking. And I'll answer that one first. Unfortunately, the quote unquote Conservative Party, once you get past the veneer, is not very conservative. And in a lot of ways, the choice between the Liberals and the Conservatives is like, you know, the old Cola Wars, Coke versus Pepsi. So that's a serious problem for Canadians, because in electing the Conservative government, we might be going from the frying pan into the fire. The one area where the Conservative Party are much more attractive to Canadians is in terms of fiscal policy, because in Canada, we have the same problems that you're seeing throughout the Western world, but particularly in North America, with cost of living, things like, insurance and food and gasoline. And of course, these dreadful climate policies that they have, those are a very, very, you know, serious concern. But, you know, the broader question is, what is Canada's place in the world? Canadians, you're right, do not want this. We went from being a country that was very, very proud of our history, very proud of our traditions, very proud of our culture and our place in Western culture, being part of things like Five Eyes and NATO. And now we have this awful government, which has unfortunately has changed our face in the world, when they're maintaining power. And this is the answer to your first question, through a time-honored tradition that you'll know about from Great Britain, is through the auspices of a coalition government. So actually, they have about 21% of the popular vote, but they're able to maintain power through a coalition with a third party, which is essentially socialist. They're called the New Democratic Party, but they're a Marxist party through and through. And their leader, Mr. Singh, who's actually not allowed to return to his country of origin in India because he's regarded as a terrorist there. He is a useful idiot for Trudeau in that he is permitting this coalition government to proceed. People who don't understand parliamentary politics will not appreciate the precariousness of a minority government. Very few minority governments, as you know, make it through their full election term because of the ability to have a non-confidence vote. Historically in Canada, that's what has occurred. This coalition government we haven't seen since the World Wars, but it's allowed the Liberals to maintain power, even though they're grossly unpopular.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that's, I think, very, very frustrating to be watching from over here, Maxime Bernier. I know Maxime very well. He's been on the show lots. He's a very, very credible politician. Obviously, he's been a cabinet minister himself. But, you know, he is struggling to break through to the mainstream. Why is that? Mm-hmm. Because he's ahead of the curve. He's saying all the things and he represents all of the things which Canadians are really upset about with Trudeau. Why is he not doing better?
I think there's a couple of reasons. First of all, I admire Max very much. I think he's a brilliant politician. He has a very keen understanding of the economics that are facing Canada and really all of the Western world. I think that he's a true conservative in the sense that his ideas are the kind that I think would bring freedom and prosperity back to Canada. Unfortunately, this infection of wokeness has taken root very deeply in Canada. And because, of course, Canada is not unique in this. I think countries like Australia and Great Britain have the same problem, although Great Britain is showing promising signs of turning away from it and watching very close what's going on in places like Ireland and Scotland. But I think the problem for Max partly is that he is a Quebecer, and there's a lot of resentment towards Quebec and other parts of the country.
We have sadly run out of time, Leighton. But listen, you've been a fantastic guest. Please do come back on. Obviously, you've got your own podcast. Where do people go to listen to your podcast, Leighton?
Well, anywhere podcasts are found, Spotify, Apple. Also, they can find us on at Grey Matter Convo on X. And I'd be grateful if people would join and follow us there. Thanks for having
Fantastic.
Me on. It's been my great pleasure.
Yeah, and please do come back. Right, okay. We've run out of time now. I'll be back in just a second right here on TNT.